No, it's not game day yet. That, of course, is an Ohio State marching band rendition of the OSU fight song, a tune that will melt the heart of any hardcore Buckeye fan. So what's it worth to you on game day? Famed Ohio State football coach Woody Hayes once said that if his team worked half as hard as the band, they'd be champions. But the OSU marching band, long known as the best damn band in the land until this year, pretty much scraped by with a relative pittance from the OSU athletic department, a relationship echoed by many collegiate band programs around the country. We'll hear from the athletic department, let them defend themselves in a few minutes. But in the meantime, last year's OSU athletic department brought in roughly $142 million, more than a third of that from football alone. The Ohio State band left to make the most of a $220,000 operating budget. Joining us now to talk about how that's changed and how the band spends its funding is John Waters, director of the Ohio State University Marching Band. Welcome to the show, John.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, are you a former OSU band member, marching band member? Were you a marching band member at another big-time athletic school? How were you treated? What was it like? Give us a call. We don't talk about this very much. It's always football, football, football. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So, John Waters, last year you depended on the athletic department for most of your funding. Can you give us a little bit of a breakdown of how it used to work?
You know, the relationship actually dates back to 1929, and Ohio State was pioneering at that time in that the athletic department provided, starting in 29, the entire operational budget for the band. And that relationship continued for many years, in fact, really through last year. And this was a national model. Many bands used this and followed this model through the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, over the decades. And so that model really was a national model that many schools followed. And we were one of the very first to be partnered with athletics. And we're certainly proud to have that partnership continue today. We are just, I would say, expanding that partnership to other areas of the university.
How was the funding? How much did you have? I said $220,000 was your operating fund. Was all of that from the athletic department, or did that include other sources of income?
That was all from the athletic department.
And then you
yes.
have other sources of income on top of that?
Yeah, I did some analysis, kind of a 10,000 foot view of the financial picture as I took over the band a year ago, and discovered that probably about 30%, 25 to 30% of the monies that we spent were actually budgeted monies. And the rest of the money, the 70 to 75%, was borne partially on the backs of the students and partially then the rest, the lion's share, really at the behest of donors. And so we were beholden to donor dollars and the rise and fall of donor dollars each year to run the program. And so I felt that we should have conversation about changing that model and trying to create an operational budget that covered the operational expenditures and first and foremost relieved the financial burden on the students themselves.
My guest is John Waters, the OSU Marching Band Director. If you want to talk about the marching band, we'd love to hear from former marching band members and hear what it was like to be on the marching band. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Relieving the burden on the students means that more kinds of students can apply or can try out for the band now, because what typically would a student be spending to participate if they were lucky enough to get on the band?
Well, with all of the ancillary expenses, the uniform parts that they had to buy, some of the outside expenses, and even in the summertime, the students are working and driving from all parts of Ohio to attend summer rehearsals, and they're giving up summer jobs early to be in the band. And I think that cost, when you start to add that all up and you add the room and board for the time that the band is here before school starts, about a month
they
before.
They pay for that as well.
They do. And so when you add that up, it's a couple thousand dollars. And so we are trying to relieve that burden on the students, because they put a lot of time in, certainly, and give great service to our university.
As far as, so they had to pay for their uniforms or parts of their uniforms?
Parts of the uniform.
They pay for dry cleaning their uniforms?
That's correct.
When you traveled, did they pay for their own room and board on travel?
No, they did not. That was part of our operational budget supplied by the athletic department.
And food, that also was covered on travel times? But travel was limited.
Travel was limited. We were limited to about one game per season, and with our new arrangement, we're expanding that travel.
Right, one game per season. A lot of people, unless they get to go to those away games, don't even notice it because they don't air the halftime shows on television anymore.
Right.
Remember the good old days.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, the airing of halftime shows on TV is certainly something that we have been working on as a national body of band directors. And you know, I think the keys are the ever-changing TV market. You know, all TVs sold today have internet connections, and so I think we're going to certainly view TV differently in the near future. And so we're looking at some ways of streaming the band halftime shows
live.
Into homes and TVs through the internet, and we're also looking at possibly a band TV show. But you know, it's all about money and advertising dollars and the network decisions to. To take on those expenditures.
I've just been informed that the second cut that we played, or the music we played, was the Buckeye Battle Cry, not the fight song. So I guess I've
that's okay. Buckeye
revealed...
Battle Cry is one of two fight songs.
Okay, but I have revealed that, as people know, I'm not an official Buckeye. But Gordon Gies already said that I'm from the Big Ten and we're all one Big Ten family. So
absolutely,
that's the important part. Now what's changed? Now the athletic department, well, let's keep talking about television for just a second. When you talk about streaming, because of the nature of television and how it's changed, mm-hmm. you're saying that it's possible we could see the guys yammering on ESPN and then have an inset or of the marching band or vice versa?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And, you know, we have developed a YouTube channel right now, and people can go on and see halftime shows. But I think that is going to have a more user-friendly interface in the near future. And I think we'll be able to see the halftime shows, and people will be able to choose whether they watch the talking heads at halftime to tell them what they've just seen or to see the band. And I think the band is so important to the color and pageantry and fabric of college football. That's what makes it unique. We have the opportunities to go to Cleveland and to Cincinnati and play at pro games and have done that for many years. And the feedback from the professional football fans is that they love it when the band is there because it brings a collegiate atmosphere. And it certainly, in this day of changing markets and money and marketing and all that, I think the college band is ever important to make the brand of college football unique. So it's not professional football, but it is indeed the college game.
When the band performs at a professional game, is it reimbursed for its expenses?
It is. It is. When we go to Cleveland, the Browns pay, and when we go to Cincinnati, the Bengals pay for that.
And do you generate revenue from doing that?
There's an honorarium paid to the band as
okay.
well, and that helps us with our some of our expenses. But it's been an arrangement that we've had for years and years with both professional teams in the state, and we mm-hmm. alternate. Not showing favoritism to one end of the state or the other, but we alternate Browns and Bengals every other year.
When you travel overseas, what kind of arrangements do you have then?
The band has not traveled
overseas. That's a goal.
And that is a goal,
okay.
Indeed. I'd love to see the band. You know, it's The band is so integral to football games here and such a part of that fabric. But I think the band also has some ability to perform in other situations outside of football. And we have certainly done that with inaugurations and things like that in the United States. But I would love to see our band travel abroad and travel to many other places.
And then there's that video last year. I think it was October 8th.
Mm-hmm.
That was the game. And by October 10th, some 8 million people had viewed the video of the halftime performance by the OSU marching band. It was the theme was video games. What did you make of that? It was so amazing to people who had been watching the usual. What did you make of the excitement over that?
Well,
and
I
they're
think,
still watching it every day.
I think it's interesting to note the power of the internet. And let's just take the demographic. There were 5 million people who watched that game on TV. And to date, you know, with the video viewing on YouTube, almost 17 million people
right.
have seen that halftime show. And that is... you know, I think speaks well to the product of a band and the product of a college band in particular. And what we did was good for us, certainly, but it was good for all college bands. It was good for all musicians. And, you know, if there was a fifth grade student that saw that video on YouTube and it made them want to pick up a trumpet and learn that instrument, then job well done. And so it's interesting to think that just that one video sparked so much interest. In fact, a quick story about that. I got an email from a band alum who was teaching English to Turkish school students. And she showed this video about 2 days after...
They were in Turkey?
They were in Turkey.
Okay.
And she showed this video to her class and walked in, and she was a band alum and wanted to show these students an American college marching band. And every student in that class had already seen the video. And so that's pretty amazing to me.
You've talked about, you know, some people have already said to me, I hope they do the running... you know, or galloping horse again this year. And I wondered about that because you have talked about previous kind of, you know, the iconic elements to the band, whether it's Script Ohio or any number of things that they do. There's a lot of tradition there. Is there any hope for a new tradition?
Well, you know, that touches on a philosophy of mine, and that's tradition through innovation. We started last year with our students talking about what we could do to distinguish ourselves and what we were going to do as a band. And sometimes my colleagues around the country say that you must be stifled and bound by this tradition at Ohio State, that you can't try anything new. And I said, certainly we have tradition to build upon, and that's a wonderful foundation. And so tradition is a great thing. But my thought about that was, how do we maintain tradition and move forward? And so we have thought about and talked about tradition through innovation, and that today's innovations become tomorrow's traditions. And so we talked to our students about the first Script Ohio, for instance, in 1936, being innovative and took the country by storm in the 30s, and it was a new and wonderful thing. And today, it's
back
one
then
of the
it
greatest.
Was on newsreels, I would imagine.
Absolutely, and it became a great tradition. And Hang On Sloopy, and down the line. And so, we are trying to today. Not really take away from any tradition that we've done, but add to that repertoire of traditions and performances.
My guest is John Waters. He's the director of the OSU Marching Band. We're talking about OSU Marching Band finances and the band going forward. Coming up, we're going to hear from Dennis Hubler. He's an associate athletic director at OSU. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Support for WOSU comes from Edible Columbus, a magazine devoted to culinary traditions, seasonal cooking, and the local food movement in our community. More information on the summer edition coming June 27th can be found at ediblecolumbus.com.
I'm Jane Clayson. Coming up on the next On Point, as the Senate debate over immigration heats up, we go to South Texas, the new front line in the battle over illegal border crossings. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for June is the Wexner Center for the Arts. Enjoy 2-for-1 admission to the galleries all month long. Visit WOSU.org.
All righty. That's the OSU Marching Band rendition of Carry On My Wayward Son, of course, by Kansas. They don't televise the college football halftime shows anymore. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. But ask any great fan of the Buckeye football, and they'll tell you how much they appreciate the halftime efforts of the band. Last year, one of their shows went viral. We had talked about that earlier, attracting more than 6 million hits in just a few days on YouTube. So what's the tradition, the artistry, and hard work of the best damn band in the land worth to Ohio State University? Joining us now to talk about that and how the funding has changed for the OSU Marching Band and other spirit programs at OSU is Dennis Hubler. He's the Associate Athletic Director for OSU and Athletic Liaison to the Marching Band and Spirit Squad. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thanks, Ann. Good being here.
Still with us is John Waters, of course, OSU Marching Band Director. John, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely.
This is weird. We have an email from Jack in Ada, Michigan. Jack, that's
how
where
did
I come
get across the line?
That is literally where I come from. I grew up most of my life in Ada, Michigan. Weird. Okay, I don't know you, Jack. Maybe I do. I was in the best damn band in the land in the 1980s, and while we felt loved and supported by the OSU community, there was always a sense that the budget did constrain the organization a bit. I remember when the team got a bid to a bowl game and rumors started going around that the entire band wouldn't be able to make the trip. And since I was an alternate at the time, that meant me. Smiley face. I am excited by the new opportunities for funding and the doors that will open for the band. The band is a great ambassador for not only the university, but also the state of Ohio, and this will only expand that role. I wonder if you might be able to ask about the future of St. John Arena and the Skull Sessions, an integral part of Saturdays in Columbus and a treasured tradition that may be endangered by the loss of the arena. Go Bucks, and thanks to John Waters for his great leadership. We are definitely going to get to the Skull Session issue, but first, I want to finish up this whole, get rid of the financial aspect of this. So, Dennis Hubler, tell us, and John Waters, pitch in, what's changed now about how the marching band is supported financially?
Well, I think, Ann, and again, John, jump in here, but one of the main things is the amount. We have increased the amount of money, the support that goes directly to the band, and as John referred to earlier, we used to have basically a line item budget for the marching. This is the marching band side. And now what we've done is really through the direction of Gene Smith, RAD, some others in the administration area and the School of Music, basically we've just transferred that money to the marching band. So it goes into their account. I wouldn't say it's quite doubled, but it's certainly a sizable increase over what was done in previous budgets.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
If I could jump in here, I would describe our budget as now kind of a trifecta of areas of funding. And as Denny mentioned, we get have gotten a great increase from the athletic department. And it was really the work after I identified and talked about this 10,000-foot view of our financial picture. It was President Gee, it was Dean Joe Steinmetz, and Dean Mark Shonda, and Rick Blatty from the School of Music, and we all got together and kind of talked about how this new funding model could look. And so I give the credit to the deans and to Gene Smith for really coming up with this model that funds the band from three areas. One, the athletic department. Secondly, the College of Arts and Sciences. And thirdly, the Office of Business and Finance. And so those three areas now contribute to an overall band fund of $1 million.
So the College of Arts and Sciences has a line item, the athletic department has a line item, and now the general fund of the university, is that what it is? It has a line item?
It's Office of Business and Finance and President's Office. So, that entity is also a line item.
And the total funding amounts to?
The total funding is $1 million.
Wow.
And it's a significant increase, certainly from what we are used to. And that will take the burden off the students, as I mentioned before. And it will also allow us to travel to more games, to update equipment, and to really be, I think, on the forefront of college bands financially.
I was going to ask you, what are other colleges doing? What are other colleges? You guys talk, as you mentioned earlier. How are other big college bands managing the expenses?
You know, if nationwide, it's interesting to note that there really is not one prescribed method for funding a band. Some are funded totally in a school of music. Some are funded totally in the athletic department. And we have, I think, a very forward-thinking arrangement here that is really representative of the band itself. The band is not necessarily a sports team, but it is a class. It's an academic class. The students get academic credit for being in the band. The band certainly plays at athletic events and is tied to the athletic department, but certainly to the university community as a whole. And so while it's an ensemble in the School of Music and while it's tied in with the athletic department, this arrangement, I think, really represents the band as a whole, because the band represents the entire campus and all the corners of the campus. And this budget has monies coming from different areas and all corners of the campus. So I think it's very representative and very forward thinking. In terms of benchmarks in the Big Ten, the bands, as I said, are funded in many, many different ways. But we are now certainly leaders in the Big Ten in terms of budget.
Just add one thing, John, as we chatted, the budget for the marching band is really the regular season. If we go to bowl games, like your listener said, he was concerned there in the 80s. But for us, bowl trips, men and women's Big Ten basketball tournaments, NCAA tournaments, we sent part of the band up to the Joe Lewis for the CCHA hockey. That money is above and beyond. So any postseason travel is handled out of, like, that would come out of
if
our athletic
they go,
budget.
It'll,
right.
And
right.
That'll continue?
Yes.
That
okay.
stays the same. This is more just regular season travel. And as John mentioned, it's, now we're, like, the band's going to four out of the five road trips this year.
And so, I also might mention that we have the opportunity to go to California this year.
The Rose Bowl?
The Cal game up in
Berkeley.
We hope
down the road, huh?
Yeah, but during the season, we play Cal in mid-September, and the athletic department and the Office of Development and Advancement have come up with funds to send the band. So the athletic department really is actually giving money above and beyond the normal operational money for us to go to Cal this year, coupled with some monies from development, and we'll be performing at a university campaign event out in LA, and then going up to Berkeley for the game. So it's a perfect, I think, melding of what the ensemble is. It's something to the university, and it's something for the athletic
department.
I
was just reading about Pixar Studios and how many OSU alum work there. Mm-hmm. They, of course,
right.
and that's where you're going to be going, and that sounds like a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Right.
In years past, Denny Hubler, how did the athletic department figure the budget? How did they for instance, last year come to the $220,000? Was there some $220,000 budget for
them? I think, and as I understand through the years, obviously, as John mentioned, traditionally in past years, if we played the school up north, if you will, on the road, the band always made that trip, spending a night either maybe in the Toledo area or Sandusky area. And a lot of times that was their only trip. But if they made another trip, we would go back to John and his staff and have them project the budget that they needed. We helped with some uniform replacement, other items, miscellaneous items. And we just built the budget as we do any other department within
How
athletics.
How much do you need?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guests, John Waters, OSU Marching Band Director, and also Dennis Hubler. He's Associate Athletic Director at OSU. We're talking about the marching band today, how it's funded, and so forth. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about the band, know somebody who's on it, want to talk about that, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Mary. She says, I'm the mom of two current band members on the drum line. It is an amazing experience for them and for my husband and I. I really am excited about the changes overall and especially the funding. I have a question about the band as a class. Why only one credit? And I heard it goes to a half credit this year. It is an unbelievable amount of time required. She also wants to know why the credit doesn't count toward performing arts requirement. How is that figured, John? Why did it cut to a half credit? I know they work hard.
It's actually a floating credit. So the students can take it for one half, up to two credits. So it's a floating credit, and it allows the students, especially music students, School of Music students, because the class demands of music students are really, I would say, on average, much more than many of the students on campus. The music students have to play in various ensembles, and if you look at their transcripts and the number of classes that music students take, it's a lot more. And so to allow them to be able to participate in band, we've had the credits float from two down to one half of a credit. And so for a biology major or a chemistry major, the time certainly is much more than that half to two credits would indicate. But we have stayed with that over the years. Really, as a help to the School of Music, to our music students, and the class is a music class.
So if now they're getting a half credit, that's for the band as a class.
Correct.
Okay, I guess I kind of get the floating credit idea that you're talking about, but what was the thought behind going from a credit to a half credit for that class?
The students actually can choose two credits down to one half credit. As they register for the class, they can choose to take it for two credits, one and a half credits, one credit, or one half.
But they're all doing the same amount of work?
They are. That
okay.
is correct.
And she asked why the credit doesn't count toward the performing arts requirement.
I can't answer that question, actually. I would have said, and without doing some research on that, I would have said that it does count for the performing arts credit. It counts. Many of our students take band and many of our other ensembles. Many of our band students not only participate in the marching band, but they sing in a choir, they play in a concert band, they play in a jazz band, and so all of that ensemble experience does count for their fine arts credit, and in particular the fine arts credit for the marching band. I would have to look
okay.
into that, but I would be surprised if it did not indeed count for credit for fine arts.
The conversation wouldn't be complete if we didn't think about what I call the cheerleaders, but I guess it's called the spirit squad.
Spirit squad now,
okay.
Correct.
The lingo is different. Tell us about the spirit squad budget. They face a lot of the same challenges that the marching band has.
Very much. And now their budget, which is really the cheerleaders and a dance squad now that we have,
okay.
that you see at football games. And
I thought there was something else,
and
right?
Men's. That budget is out of athletics, and it's approximately $150,000 or so for the upcoming year. And it is some different. Again, you talk about putting in a lot of hours,
right?
And going to a lot of events. I know John mentioned it's daily. Even we receive requests from cheerleaders or Brutus or the marching members of the marching band to come to a birthday party or a corporate office
Brutus
or something.
Brutus is part of the
spirit, the cheer group. But their budget is about $150,000. Now they run some camps, do a couple other clinics to help supplement that account. But take the cheer squad, for instance, they have 40 members, basically an A and a B, scarlet and gray squad. This year we have 6 Brutai, if you will. So, but only one is seen at one time, never two.
Don't want to spoiler.
Kind of like Santa Claus, I guess, in a way. Huh? We can't have two. But their budget is currently through the athletic department. Their coach, if you will, reports to the athletic department.
Okay.
But it's just amazing the tie between the marching bands or portions of it and the cheer and Brutus. Just always in demand. So.
Is there a credit for what they do, too?
No.
No academic credit?
Yeah, no academic credit.
And they don't all travel with the team.
No.
They take turns? Or?
Yeah, they and that's really up to the coach. But it's pretty much the more senior members, if you will travel. But there's no travel to basketball games. So you never see in the Big Ten, you never see a visiting cheer squad. We don't go to Michigan State or Indiana. Football, we take 8 cheerleaders and Brutus, so 9. And that's a Big Ten policy for football. We take more to a bowl game, and we take more to, like, the NCAA basketball tournament. But really no travel for basketball during the season.
Okay, let's not forget the skull session brought up from Jack in Ada, Michigan. I was going to ask you about that. The event moved to St. John Arena the year of my birth, and people can just go ahead and look that up. And more than 10,000 attend every football Saturday, sometimes like as many as 12,000.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I've never been to one of those. What happens at those, and what will happen when St. John goes away?
Oh, Ann, we've got to bring you to a skull session.
I know.
It's the best free show in town.
Exactly.
It's really amazing. It is.
I think it enhances the value of the game day experience.
It's on the game day.
Yes, it is. It's 2 hours prior to the kickoff.
Yep.
And actually, Coach Tressel started a tradition with skull session that he brings the team. He brought the team through, and Urban Meyer has continued that tradition. And so, 10 to 13,000 of our closest friends pack into St. John Arena on Saturday afternoons. And the band thunders down the tunnel and into the arena, and then the team comes in, and the place goes nuts. And really, it's the skull session used to be an event for the band to rehearse. It was truly a rehearsal, a skull session to mentally go through the show and rehearse for the game in the stadium. It has now developed certainly into a big
another
pep rally.
Tradition.
And I think it's one of our most unique traditions in comparison to every other college band. There are a lot of college bands who have tried to mimic that over the years, and so we have held that as a uniqueness to us, and to really the fabric of the band and the fabric of Ohio State.
So, Dennis, what happens to it?
Jump in here too again, John. First of all, St. John Arena is going to be around for a few years.
Okay.
And there are some discussions about possible alternatives, I guess, when that happens. And I'm not really aware of a whole lot of details. John, you might
I will just say this, we'll be involved in the conversations moving forward, and we understand the constraints of the facility itself and the reasons that folks want to, tear that down and replace the facility. It is older. But we too understand the great thing that Skull Session is, and I think Urban Meyer would agree that it's really a great thing for the team. When the team walks into there, it's deafening, and the fans are absolutely jazzed that the team is there, and I think it pumps the players up. And so we will work, and I am confident, just like this budget thing, that we will have the greatest minds in our university, and people with great ideas to maintain that tradition of the skull session. Whether it's a different location or something, we will certainly as a group come up with something to save skull session and make it continue to be the tradition that it is.
And I wanted to add back to now that the team comes through, and this goes back to Coach Tressel, when Jim arrived, it wasn't year one, but year two, the football team used to stay various areas around Columbus, the Hilton at Easton downtown. Well, Coach Tressel at the time raised the question about staying at the Blackwell. It was easy, they could walk to the stadium. And then I think, John, maybe a number of us were talking and said, hey, Coach, would you consider, as you walk from the Blackwell to the stadium, going through St. John, going to the skull session, and then walking over and down the ramp entrance of the stadium. And we thought, Jim, we'll never want to do it. The night before, there'll be all the noise on campus, da-da-da. And now, and I think the first game of year two, he said, I can't believe we didn't do this last year.
I would imagine the athletes like to go to the pep rallies, too.
Yeah,
it gets
yeah.
them.
And when Absolutely. They walk from the Blackwell to St. John and then down the ramp, come up and then head to the stadium, I mean, people now line the walkways, and it's really neat. People are charged up, and I really think the players enjoy it. I know when Coach Meyer came, he said, hey, that's a no-brainer. That's just part of what we do. And I think spending a few minutes for Coach Meyer and then usually one of the captains to say – maybe a minute's worth to the crowd at skull session is really neat. But that tradition, I think, has really caught on over the past few years.
It sets the tone for the entire day.
It does.
It really does. And wrapping up the day with Carmen, Ohio, I think it's our college game day experience at Ohio State is unlike any other in the country. And that's why we love it. That's why we get chills every time the band comes into the stadium.
We will be wrapping up this show with Carmen, Ohio, of course. But first, we'll be hearing from a reporter who covers the University of Michigan football team, who wrote about their problems with their marching band last year. Want to hear about how others do it as well. For now, I want to say, John Waters, you've made quite a mark in your first year as director, and thanks for joining us today. It's really fun to talk to you.
Thanks so much. All the credit, though, is to our great staff and the students. I'm just along for the ride and happy to be here.
And Dennis Hubler, Associate Athletic Director at OSU, thanks as well to
you for
joining us and filling us in.
And I wanted to mention real quick, and the fans, we get so many responses already. As we said, the marching band is traveling to 4 out of the 5 games this fall. And it's amazing, just people that I know or others saying, oh my word, we didn't think there was any chance the band will be able to see the band on the road. So I think the excitement is already building for the marching band for the upcoming season.
A new tradition for those among us who are lucky enough to go to those away games.
Right,
so
right,
that's great.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks again. When we return, we'll be hearing from Nick Baumgartner. He is a reporter in Michigan, covers University of Michigan athletics. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Each day, All Things Considered brings you unparalleled insight into the latest news. We interview experts who actually know what they're talking about and have the skills to explain. We unravel complex issues that sometimes seem too hard to grasp. I'm Robert Siegel. Join us every afternoon for All Things Considered from NPR News, your appointment with excellence.
Weekday afternoons at 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Council for Older Adults of Delaware County, helping to provide compassionate in-home care for older loved ones. Its mission is to help older people live safely at home and avoid unnecessary institutional care. More at growingolder.org.
Thursday night, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes returns to WOSU-TV. Jeremy Brett and David Burke star as the great detective and his friend Watson in the original, highly acclaimed series. This week, when a notorious retired builder is found dead, his recently named heir is the prime suspect, but Holmes is certain of his client's innocence. Watch Sherlock Holmes and the Norwood Builder Thursday night at 10 on WOSU-TV. This is 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, bringing you local and national news 24/7 and always streaming at WOSU.org.
Okay. So if you're a Buckeye fan or a Michigan grad, you probably recognize the Michigan fight song, The Victors, as performed by the University of Michigan Marching Band. The biggest Buckeye football game of the season every season is the last game of the season every season against the University of Michigan, OSU's great nemesis. Last year, the Wolverines Marching Band had struggles of its own, and sports reporter Nick Baumgartner, he writes for several Michigan newspapers, including the Grand Rapids Press, Flint Journal, and more, covered those struggles. He joins us now to talk about how it works for the marching band up there. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And still with us, Dennis Hubler, Associate Athletic Director at OSU, and John Waters, OSU Marching Band Director. They wanted to stay with us so they could hear that Michigan fight song.
Not so much.
So everybody out there, don't go crazy. So the Michigan band controversy arose over travel costs as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that debacle last year, Nick Baumgartner?
Yeah, debacle is probably the best way of putting that one. It actually started about probably like 4 or 5 months, maybe 6 months before the start of the 2012 season. Michigan actually opened its 2012 football season in Dallas, Texas against Alabama in a neutral site game at Cowboys Stadium. So it wasn't a true road game. It wasn't a true home game. It was one of these made-for-TV, neutral events that was similar to a bowl game, but it wasn't a bowl game. So it was a TV setup situation through ABC and all these types of things. So while it felt like a bowl game and it felt like a travel trip, like a big, normal end of the season type deal, and it had been hyped up for more than a year, it really wasn't. So originally the band was under the understanding that it was going to travel to that game with the team like it would for any bowl game. In most situations, in most bowls, when Michigan went to the Sugar Bowl in 2011, when they went to the Outback Bowl at the end of last season, those bowl committees pay for the band to travel with the team. In this situation, since it wasn't a bowl, there was no bowl committee, there was none of that. The band was not going to be paid for externally. It would have had to come out of Michigan's athletic budget. And in April, the game was in August. In April, Michigan Athletic Director Dave Brandon decided they weren't going to do that. So they weren't going to pay what he estimated about $400,000 to put the band on planes and have all their equipment and travel them down there to Dallas for the fight song. In any event,
big mistake.
Yeah, big mistake. Where that got out, people kind of lost it. And I think it took about a week and a half before they found the money from external donors to send them down there, and all was cured.
Dennis Hubler, you're nodding your head. Yeah. This has happened here as well.
You're right. We had 4 or 5 years ago, we played at Texas down at Austin, and that was just basically a road game. It was a match. We had Texas here the year before, and we did not have the funds to transport the complete band. We had talked a little about a pep band, but then we were most fortunate when a family stepped up here in the Columbus area and said, we'll see that the band gets there.
That's
and,
some Buckeye spirit.
Big spirit, yes. Very big spirit, yeah.
How is the band funded at the University of Michigan, Nick? What are they considered well off? Now, the OSU band just went from $220,000 a year up to $1 million a year. They've reconfigured how the funding stream works. What about at Michigan?
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact figure on how they're funded, but I know that travel and most of those costs for football games in particular and for basketball games in certain situations aren't funded through the athletic department. That money... the tricky part of it and what made Michigan kind of look foolish on this was that they were going to make $4.7 or $4.8 million for their athletic department from that one singular TV game with Alabama. And they were crying over $400,000 they couldn't find to send the band to this game. I think they're funded relatively well. I'm not sure the exact number of that, but I know it's not through the athletic department. Travel, and that's obviously the biggest cost for them as far as athletics goes, travel. Michigan travels its band during football season to conference road games. So you'll see it at Ohio Stadium for when they're in Columbus, but you won't see it in a non-conference road situation. Like this year, they're going to go to Connecticut, and the band won't go with them because that's just typically they don't ever do that. So that's a normal thing that they try to do. Now, I'm not sure if any kind of extra money kicked up from this. I know a lot of what ended up happening was is the $400,000 was basically raised through donors. So maybe donors became more aware of the situation and bumped more money into it. I'm not 100% positive. I'm probably the wrong person to ask on that. But I do know that they're separate. A lot of people think that they're the same. They come under the same financial umbrella, and they don't. You know, the band does not dip into that athletic fund because, as we all know, when Michigan makes $4.5 million from one game for a football game, they take that money and reinvest it into their athletic programs, softball, track, tennis, all those types of things, and it pays for all those student athletes as well.
Well, I mentioned at the outset of the show that the OSU's athletic department brought in roughly $142 million last year, more of a third of that from football alone. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times it's easy to look at that and say, "How are you, seriously, just $220,000 a year?" Mm-hmm. But I guess Dennis Hubler, it seems like a pittance.
You know, I'm sure, and to some it does. When you look at our budget, and as you know, our fiscal year starts July 1, we end up hoping to be in the black, if you will. There's a lot of years we're basically at a break even. In our case, and I can't speak for our friends up in Ann Arbor, but, you know, we have 36 varsity sports, and it takes a lot of money. But and I think back to the Texas situation, we had said early on that we just could not afford for, you're talking charter airlines and what have you. We would have considered like a pep band, 40, 50 pieces of the band. But the only way the band was able to make that trip was through this generous donation. Now, you know, like we said, the away trips, bowl games, et cetera, other trips, that's all covered either by us directly or through the funds that we give John and his staff.
So, Nick, did you say there is talk now of changes about how the band will be funded in the future?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it is. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some of it that came from this situation, because I know that most people had no idea how this worked when it happened the last time. This is, I guess, the first time it really they came into a snafu with it, because I think most people, again, they viewed that game, that Alabama game in Texas Stadium or Cowboy Stadium, as a bowl game. They viewed it as one of those special situations like the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl, or this past year Michigan sent its entire band to the Final Four, you know, those types of things, those big events. Everybody viewed it as one of those, and they just assumed the band would be there. I think the band assumed that as well. I think by probably creating some awareness to the situation, I think they probably did maybe bump up their funds a little bit. I can't imagine they did not. I'm not sure what the band funds are. I don't cover mm-hmm. I only cross those guys very, very rarely. That was actually one of my first dealings with the band, because it was such a big deal at the time. But, you know, it's also important to remember that, you know, what Michigan and Ohio State do with a band or what they do with TravelWise is completely different than what most other schools do, because Michigan and Ohio State are two of the most financially well-off, you know, athletic departments in the country. So if they can't afford, these expenses for certain things, then imagine what a small Northwestern or one of these other smaller Big Ten schools can do. I mean, it's got to be crazy. So it's one of those interesting things that it costs a lot of money to travel these bands because they're so big with all their equipment and everything else. But, you know, the football money that is made from an Ohio State home game or a Michigan home game or whatever has to go back into the athletic department, because that's how you see these brand new facilities being built and all these, and that's how they win, and that's how, and everybody loves that and everything else. But football and slightly men's basketball, but mostly football, pays the bill for all of that. So that money almost always has to exclusively stay within that athletic department.
You know, in Ohio State, we also talked earlier in the hour about the tradition of the Ohio State band. It's a huge part of the tradition of football at OSU, and it dates back almost to the very beginning of OSU football. Does Michigan have that same relationship with its band? Do the fans, you know, does it, you know, set their hearts just a fluttering, you know, when they come to the field?
Yeah, I think what last April proved to us was that it does, because I think people were so upset that they were paying how much, you know, a lot of people that were going to go to that game in Texas were paying all this money to go, and they found out they weren't going to hear the band play, you know, the victors after they score a touchdown. Turns out that day they didn't score many touchdowns. Yeah, like they only scored two, so it wouldn't matter. But, you know, that was kind of the big thing. It was we want to hear, you know, in Michigan Stadium, every time they score a touchdown, you know, you hear that, and that's a big thing. That's obviously something that people, that's part of the reason some people come. And, you know, the band plays the halftime show and all that type of thing, because they don't have the Script Ohio, which I think is awesome, by the way. That's one of my favorite things whenever we see Ohio State. But they don't have anything like that, but I think people have the attachment to the fight song. One of the more recognizable fight songs in the country. And when they, you know, when they found out they were going to have to hear that over like a, you know, piped in music through a loudspeaker or something, I think people were pretty upset about it. And that proved, I think, that there is a large attachment to the band and the football program.
And I think it proves, you know, what a college band brings to a stadium and the true atmosphere and flavor of collegiate football.
So, John Waters, I mean, the OSU-Michigan game is a big game, you know, sports-wise. Is it? What's it like from the musical point of view, from the marching band point of view?
Well, you know, certainly we're just happy to be part of the whole fabric of it and to create atmosphere and to create an experience for our fans. And you know, part of it is very businesslike. You know, the students come in the morning. We report about 6 hours prior to the kickoff for a rehearsal and preparations for the game. And then throughout the day, you know, there are those moments where the band is really, really part of that game day experience. You know, my favorite part, I think, of a game day is as we are playing and I have a moment to catch out of the side of my eye a father and you know, a 5 or 6 year old son in the stands. And they're clapping along as the band is doing Script Ohio. And I see the father pointing and, you know, showing his son O-H-I-O and showing him the eye dotter and
all
of that.
Teaching a little spelling lesson. Yeah.
And it's such a wonderful thing because that tradition is passed down and it's passed down from generation to generation. You know, just like at Michigan, you know, they make that terrible M on the field, and that tradition, as unfortunate as it might, no. Our friends at Michigan have a great band, and we have a lot of fun with that rivalry. But it's truly, you know, what makes collegiate football unique.
I think the ramp entrance for us, John, at Ohio State, done it forever, but every game it doesn't matter. When that ramp entrance comes, it's just the chills start all over again.
Well, John Waters and Dennis Hubler, thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Nick Baumgartner, thanks to you for joining us today. We really appreciate your participation as well.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. And for all of you who are still cringing over the Michigan fight song, here we leave you with Carmen, Ohio. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.